Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
The prosecution is winding down its case in the first phase of the trial of admitted Boston Marathon bomber Jahar Tsarnaev. Prosecutors, in fact, could rest as early as this week. With that shift in mind, we're joined this morning by WBUR's David Boeri from the federal courthouse in Boston. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Bob.
So the prosecution is trying to portray Jahar Tsarnaev as a jihadist. As it winds down this phase of the trial, how has it been arguing that point this week?
It has essentially positioned him as this person who's influenced by what he saw on the internet, that he wanted to be a jihadi, and the defense has said, no, that's not it. It's the brother who's responsible. But now we've seen the government's case, which for the defense is a death by a thousand cuts. Yesterday, it was finally established in the testimony that the gun used to kill Officer Sean Collier matched the gun used by the Tsarnaev brothers at that shootout in Watertown. And it also established that a month before the bombing, Jahar and his brother went to Manchester to a shooting range to do target practice with 9mm handguns. Well, a 9mm handgun of that type was used to kill Collier. And Jahar actually paid for the 1.5 hours of shooting time. So the government is trying to show, and I think they've been successful, that Jahar is much more committed and much more involved than the defense has said he was.
The prosecution spent a good deal of time this week with testimony from terrorism expert Matthew Levitt. What's his role?
He comes in to tie Jahar with all that stuff they found on all those different devices, the cell phone, the iPod, the laptop, the hard computer. And what he is there for is to talk about how people become radicalized. The expert Levitt says there's one particular firebrand, Anwar al-Awlaki, who Jahar is listening to. They use the witness to compare the statements from the firebrand al-Awlaki and what was found in the boat written in pencil. And according to this expert, it's not the confession that the government and we in the media had portrayed it as. It is a statement of intention, which is called upon by the jihadist extremist. It's a statement of intentions. This was done for Allah, to protect the Ummah, the community of Islamic believers. And therefore, that act of violence not only is allowable, it's praiseworthy, and it gets the practitioner of that violence or those who committed those violence into the ultimate, the highest levels of heaven.
On the other side, the defense appeared to score some points in its cross-examination of Levitt. Tell us about that and what the defense has managed to accomplish.
On the cross-examination yesterday, they established that this so-called expert on the Mideast doesn't speak Arabic. He doesn't speak the other key language here, Russian. More important, though, is they made the point that the government never gave Dr. Levitt the computer files or the audio recordings from any of Tamerlan Tsarnaev's computers so that he could analyze those. And, you know, Levitt said, well, my focus was on this defendant. So David Brook, the defense attorney, came back, and I thought somewhat effectively saying, wait a minute, your job here is to provide context. Wouldn't you want to know what's going on with the other person involved in the violence? And also, wouldn't you want to know if the defendant was harangued and instructed into turning violent? Finally, he pointed out that millions of people have downloaded this jihadi material, as I myself have been doing, Bob. And so he's suggesting the expert really doesn't know much more than anybody else in terms of being an expert here.
The defense has asked a lot more questions in this past week than at the beginning of the trial. Of course, the focus all along has been on fighting the death penalty and not actually contesting guilt. They've acknowledged Tsarnaev is the admitted bomber. Do they appear to be scoring many victories?
Victories isn't the right word to use here because it is a long campaign. Bob, the way I analogize it is the defense is scoring field goals, whereas the prosecution here is grinding out touchdowns.
Back to the big picture for a moment. As we said at the beginning, the government could wrap up its case as early as this week. So what's the defense going to do, do you think, when it gets its turn.
The defense, I think, will put up several witnesses. It may last a day or two, but what they want to do is they want to get an expert talking about Tamerlan. As much as they can shift attention to Tamerlan and suggest that Tamerlan's the guy that brought him in, and to look at what was on Tamerlan's computers, because they want to make the point, all that stuff that was found on Jahar's computers, it's 0.3% of 1% of what's on there, and the government can't prove who put it on there. The defense is going to suggest it's Tamerlan. They're going to try to do that, but they're up against the judge who's ruled mitigation. All those arguments about mitigation have to wait to the second phase of the trial. That's going to be a battle.
David, you said the defense might put up a witness or two. Does that mean testimony in this case could be over with within a week or two?
Probably by this time next week, we'll be looking at the jurors getting instructions and starting the deliberations.
WBUR's David Boeri, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
For further insight and analysis of the trial, check out the new WBUR Boston Globe podcast, Finish Line, with WBUR reporter David Boeri and Globe columnist Kevin Cullen. Download the free podcast at WBUR.org or go to iTunes and search for Finish Line WBUR.